The time now is 24 minutes to one, and I welcome my lovely guest of the day. It's Lottie Sweeney. How do I describe you? Can I call you a prop artist? Is that right? What's the official term?
Yeah, I don't really know. Paint effects I do. I also make props for museums.
Well, you're very talented. Lottie has put some apples on the desk, which you would swear are real apples, but they're not, because I've picked them up and they weigh a ton. They're made from, is it jesmonite?
Jesmonite. It's a water-based resin.
Well, we'll talk all about your career and what you do. It's really interesting stuff. You have been described as a magician with a paintbrush. Well, why not? Let's talk a little about your early years. Where are you from originally? Are you local? Were you born somewhere else?
No, I grew up in Cumbria, actually.
Oh, a long way away.
Yeah, between the Lake District and Yorkshire. It's the bit that no one really ever goes to.
You got happy memories of childhood there?
Yeah, it's great. It's very... Well, it was in the 70s. It was very derelict up there, and there were grants to do up houses.
Yeah. What a shame you didn't have money to buy a house. It would have gone up in value, wouldn't
it? Yeah, I mean, it's really expensive around there now. Yeah. But then it was very empty.
As a child, were you very keen on just conventional artwork?
I made lots of things, but I was I spent a lot of time. I had a donkey. My parents bought me a donkey, and I spent a lot of time in my own little universe.
Were you an only child?
No, I had a brother, but he didn't like going outside.
Your brother didn't like going outside?
No, so I just used to go off on my own.
Why didn't your brother like going outside?
He just didn't like it outside.
Is he different? Does he go outside these days?
I don't know. Not very much.
Did the donkey go outside?
Yeah, we used to go off on the fells.
If your parents bought you a donkey and it only wanted to go inside, to the old lodger. What was the donkey called?
Oscar.
Oh, that's a nice name. Yeah. So you bonded with the donkey.
In a manner of speaking, yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah,
yeah, we went on adventures.
Did it live a long life?
Yeah, it did. I had it till I was 22.
Oh, right. Oh, that's quite a substantial part of your young life then.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
You've not had one since?
No.
Right. Well, maybe in retirement.
Or
just support a sanctuary. Did you actually go to college studying art or design or anything like that?
No, I went to Durham University and did a geography degree.
Oh, geography. What drew you to that? Or was it just anything to go to college?
My folks wanted me to do an academic degree.
And so, you passed, presumably?
Yeah, I did pass. I moonlighted up at Newcastle University doing... they had, like... It was a bit like Open University, but it was Open College of Arts. So I did a course up there, and the tutor was amazing. So all my weekends spent up there. And then during the week, I used to do the geography degree.
Was there ever a moment when you thought you might actually embark on a career off the back of your geography degree?
No. Never.
So it was, in a way, it was an excuse just to go to college to make friends, to socialise and to get a degree, but not to actually pursue a career in that direction.
Well, the idea was that it's very different now, but back then...
More relaxed.
Yes. And there was the idea that if you were an artist, you were just going to live in a garret, and there wasn't really a career out there for you.
Sure.
And so they'd paid money for my education. They wanted me to have a degree, and geography is a very employable degree.
It's transferable to many things.
Yeah.
So what did you write your final dissertation on?
Community in the Isle of Man, which is where I was living at the time.
So you had to spend some time in the Isle of Man.
Yeah, they've moved over there. So,
gosh, I've heard it's a... Well, I don't want to be in any way disparaging, but I hear not everyone fits in the Isle of Man.
No, it's quite a strange place.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... Because it's an island, it has an island mentality, basically. And it's quite... it's changed a lot. Since we lived there. But when we lived there, there were hardly any incomers. And it had just become fairly acceptable for people to move over there. So we weren't not welcome. I mean, it helped that I went out with a Manx man whose family were like the mafia. But, you know.
How are they actually sort of ruled there? They got their own internal parliament or council?
They have their own government, which is quite a bizarre and very old-fashioned government. But that is overruled by the government here.
Fair
enough. But they've got their own currency. And it's a good job they are overruled, actually, on many things.
I used to know a chap, well, I still do, who used to go over there regularly for an annual festival. And he said that the trip over on the ferry was often appalling.
Yeah.
Do you find that?
Yeah, it was awful. When I used to go from university over there, I mean, it was often, you know...
Very rough.
Really, really rough. And the whole boat would be silent, apart from the sound of people throwing up.
OK, well, let's turn to your props then. When did you first start to produce props? What were the first things that you made?
The first things I made, I started doing bits and pieces of work for the SS Great Britain. And one of the women who did the education department, she said it'd be quite nice for you to make some food, some quite strange food that the kids wouldn't know what it was.
Was this of a time when the SS Great Britain was sailing?
Yeah, so Victorian food, basically. Uh-huh. And they had lots of stuff in aspic, which is like a gelatin that they used to colour. So she asked me to make this eel in aspic because it's something, I mean, eel, we don't really eat. I mean, most people don't eat much eel these days. So I made an eel in aspic and it was a great success. People loved it and they used to put it in the middle of the buffets and things when they had directors around and things like that. So it became a kind of standing joke.
And subsequently, you've made a whole range of food and many other things. Let's just talk about the food. I mean, the apples you've got there, as I mentioned earlier, are so realistic. I mean, you would swear they were real. It takes a long time to get that, if I can use the word, verisimilitude, that appearance of being real. You must have done a lot of trial and error.
Yeah, there's a huge amount. Well, that's what I love about it, really. There's a huge amount of experimentation. And when somebody asks you to make things, even though now I've made a lot of fake food, so I have a good basis of knowledge for how to do things. But always people ask me to do stuff and I'm like, how am I going to do that? What am I going to use to make that? And that's part of the joy of it, really. That's the fun.
I imagine when you suddenly come across a combination and it works and looks realistic, it must be brilliant.
Yeah, it is brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant. And that's the creative buzz. That's what people create things for, is that you're always looking for that moment where something, it's suddenly right.
It is a form of alchemy. I know that you say you can replicate any material, brick, metal, fur, skin, scales and wood. But let's just mention some of the food that you've done, first of all. Of course, fruit and vegetables you've done, cheese. There's a fried breakfast on your website as well, which is really good. How much of a challenge were the eggs?
The whole fried breakfast actually was really, really difficult. That was for the Submarine Museum down in Gosport. Uh-huh. And so you had to make it. The idea is that 6 or 7 people are sitting having breakfast. So when I make them, you make them as though 6 or 7 different men are eating their breakfast slightly differently.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So people put their sauce on differently. People start on different parts of the breakfast. So it looked like it was half eaten. And the idea is that there's a kind of tension created that when people come along and they see it, it's as though those 7 men have just got up and left to do something. So they've just left their breakfast there. And they were really difficult to make, actually. Runny egg was very difficult to make.
I bet it was.
And the bacon was quite difficult.
I imagine if you asked an average person to replicate a bacon that suggests a breakfast that suggests tension, they wouldn't know where to begin.
No.
But you've cracked it, literally. It looks absolutely fantastic. And you've also done a pig's head. There's a lovely photo of you, your head against, in fact, it's labelled so we know which is which. I'm joking. Your head against a pig's head. I mean, that's brilliant, that pig's head, isn't it? But again, that must have taken a lot of work to get correct.
Yeah, well, quite often with those kind of things, what you do is I started off with a pig skull, and then you just build up the muscle structure.
So you actually went to that much trouble to start with the skull?
Yeah. It's good. I mean, I worked for this guy who, early on in my career, who worked for Madame Tussauds, and the building up of faces and in likeness, you start with the skeleton and then you build the muscle structure on top of it, because everybody's muscle structure is slightly different, which gives all the different shapes of the faces.
I know reading on your website, you do a lot of research and you photograph things a lot, don't you? Just to get the feel for what they're actually like.
And I also often go on field trips, which is also the best thing. So, for example, if I have to paint a shorthorn cow, I'll go to a farm where they keep shorthorn cows and I will go and see them and then photograph them. And then you can know what something looks like, but until you actually have to make it or paint it, you suddenly realise that you don't know.
You've got to observe it, actually.
Yeah, really, really closely.
Now, you also make industrial objects, machinery, engineering. You also do humans as well, I've seen. I mean, just a fabulous array of stuff. Tell me how you work with a client, because you work with people like the SS Great Britain, you mentioned Glastonbury Abbey, HMS Alliance at Portsmouth as well, and other places, because you're busy at the moment. they invite you in, presumably, and tell you roughly what they want. And how does it work from then on?
It varies considerably, depending on how much they know me and know of the work that I do. But ideally, they get you in quite early on. And the it's called interpretation, which is how they're going to tell the story. So they make a story that they want to tell. They present me with the story and they say, what can you make which will tell this story in the best possible way?
Yeah, and what you want, ideally, and I know you've mentioned this on your website, is to get some sort of emotional response from people.
Yeah.
Which is a sort of intangible thing to go for, but you know when you've got it.
You know when you've got it. And I do know that there are certain things that are quite obvious, like I made a bucket of offal, which, and that was brilliant. I mean, we went around putting it by people's desks in the offices and people were absolutely disgusted. And so there's that kind of element to it. But there are also fake foods, quite easy to get an emotional response because everybody makes food. Everybody has washing up left at the end of the day and dirty pans and grease splattered all over the place. Everybody knows what that's like. So people are able to tune in to the story that you're telling through fake food really easily. It's a really good kind of medium for telling a historical story.
It must be nice for you, though, if you're at the back of a crowd of people and they're working their way through an exhibit and they respond to something that you've created.
Yeah, and people used to do that all the time because they could go and touch them as well. So it wasn't that they were behind a rope or something like that. They could actually walk in and touch things and look at the dirty plates and make... They always made jokes about the dirty plates.
Well, it's funny you should mention that because I remember reading one of the reasons that Star Wars struck a chord with so many people was that the spacecraft in Star Wars looked like they'd been used. They were dirty, not the gleaming spacecraft of other sci-fi films. And similarly with your food and things you do, it's got that feeling of being used in the past.
Yeah, and you've also got to create an atmosphere around it. So the paint effect stuff comes into its own because you've got everything's blackened and greasy and there are things in the sink left over. So you put yourself into that story, basically, and say, well, if I was making this and that and the other, if I was making a range of pies, there would be flour scattered across, you know, and a little jug of water and all the things that are around that fake food that make it then a piece within a setting rather than just a piece on its own.
And also you've got layers, haven't you? There's the visual layer, but equally at some places there'll be sound effects and even smells, which just pile on the effect.
That is the best thing. I mean, I don't work alone at all. I work in big projects where you've got a lot of people putting in elements that then create an entire kind of experiential experience for people. So, a lot of noise, heat, all the fires. You know, we made all these fake fires and they had in the SS Great Britain, they had kind of rats scuttling along, which are made by a BBC film company, a Bristol-based nature people.
Now, you've also brought a cabbage with you, and you were saying to me when you came, and you give these to friends as doorstops.
Yeah. They have gone in several museums in crates, but I make Christmas presents quite often.
Well,
I
tell
friends.
You what, if you just produce them as works of art, you look at some of the... If you could become the new Jeff Koons, I mean... pretty much the richest artist in the world. If you took it a bit more seriously, as genuine artworks. I mean, they're lovely. The apples themselves are just gorgeous. Tell me a bit about the process then, because there's the moulding, the making, the casting, everything. How does it work? Say you wanted to make, I know, a sausage. What's the process?
You start really, the beginning starting point is whether people can touch it and whether it needs to be attached. And how it needs to be attached, because that depends on what you can make it out of. So if people can't touch it, you've got a lot more freedom because you don't have to make things that are indestructible. Mm. But if people can touch it, then you have to be able to connect them all together. So before you start making anything, that's what you start with, is how it's going to... where it's going to
be. Yeah, and it's remarkable the amount of damage people can do, and they try and steal stuff, and just kids are just yank at things to see if they'll come off, won't they?
Yeah, but I mean, that's the amount of damage is generally very minimal, and what I did find was that they're fine until there's the slightest bit of damage on them.
And they feel they can exploit it.
Yeah, as soon as there's something that looks in disrepair or looks like it's not been cared
Let's finish the job.
Yeah, it easily and very quickly becomes destroyed.
So just talk me through then. You decided to do an object and you are told whether it's going to be fixed down or not.
Yeah.
What, do you design it in some other material first or do you make it from the finished material? How does it work?
It depends what I'm making, but say the calf's head. I do a lot of research. I try and find out what that looks like. What does boiled meat look like? So I start at that point. Quite often I make things in my own house, photograph them, and then I decide what materials I'm going to make it out of and I start ordering things in. So for the calf's head, I ordered a calf's skull to start with, air drying clay, and lots of resins and various paints. And then I make it as though I was making a clay model of a head. And then when that's done, that's dried. And then you start putting on the resins and then you start recreating what boiled meat looks like. And then you build it up gradually until you've got the entire piece. And then there's always a moment, like on the calf's head, you'll see that there's butter, parsley butter that's dripped over it. And that was resin, coloured resin. And there's always this moment when you've nearly finished and you've just got to do the last thing. And if that goes wrong, the whole piece, you have to start again. And that has happened. But there's an amazing kind of point you get to where you're just like, please let this work.
When it does work, that must be a lovely feeling.
Yeah, it's a great feeling.
Yeah, I bet there's been times when you've taken your props along to be fitted in situ where the people who've commissioned them are just knocked out by them.
Yeah, I mean, often people are really pleased. Sometimes you don't really hear very much of that because you're in the midst of the end of a project and it's a very, very stressful time for everybody. And what people want you to do is just go in, really professional, put all your stuff out. But generally, people are really pleased.
Now, I know that you're constantly experimenting with new paints, texturing agents, glazes and applications. You've got to keep your method secret, though, because you've come up with stuff, I think, that looks so good that you should just keep very quiet about it so that you're more in demand because other people can do it to the standard that you do.
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, it isn't rocket science, a lot of it. It's to do with the experimentation. But I have developed lots of ways of making things.
And you also work at heights, in tight spaces, on a small or a large scale. What's the highest you've been up doing stuff?
Tops of buildings. I used to work for a company where we did a lot of stuff on rooftops. But also the engine room in the SS Great Britain is huge.
Yeah, it's a big one, isn't it?
And that was one of my first job there. Mm. And it was a massive site to work on.
We should mention it's not just the props that you produce, but you also do realistic backdrops sometimes to work in tandem with them, don't you?
Yeah. So the engine room was an example, really. I worked with the Glaswegian team. And they got me in. Basically, the structure of the SS Great Britain couldn't support a metal engine room being put in. So they had to make it out of wood and plastics. And then I went in and painted it all to look like metal. So, I mean, it was great because a friend of mine went to visit it and he was just like, you've been there for a year and I don't really understand what you've done.
Well, I tell you what, the metal effects that you've replicated, because I've been to the Essex Great Britain and I've seen them online as well, they you would swear that it is actual metal parts. They're brilliant.
Well, the thing about if I do my job well, people shouldn't really notice. And that's the ironic thing about it.
They'll think they're just the original items in the original place.
Yeah, and that means I've done my job.
It's interesting, I read that good design can increase visitor numbers as well. I suppose it makes people go back as well.
Well, I got a lot of feedback from people, particularly teachers, actually, who said to me that the stuff that I'd made and the kind of the atmosphere that as a team we'd created, it meant that their kids could learn really easily. Without them actually having to explain it. And they became excited about it without the teachers having to enthuse.
Exactly. Well, it encapsulates what the object's like, you know, because it's right there in front of them.
Yeah, exactly.
It brings it home. Have you thought about expanding into TV or film work? I mean, there are prop makers, you know, that do top jobs for top films and one thing and another.
Yeah. It's never really... You take different paths and
but there's
TV
more money
path,
in that direction.
I know, but I don't really do it for money, to be honest.
No.
I do it because I love it. And the museum world has always been the one that it's just been the way that I've ended up going, really.
What are you most proud of the various jobs you've worked on over the years?
Oh, what am I most proud of? I was pretty proud of the fried breakfast.
And that's at Portsmouth, isn't it?
Yeah, that's at Portsmouth in the Submarine Museum.
Now, it was quite hard getting you in because you've been very busy recently. What have you been working on in the last few months?
Oh, I'm working on something slightly different at the moment. I'm working for a man who's a Qigong master, which is like Tai Chi. It's a kind of form of Tai Chi. And yes, he's a Chinese man. And he got me in to hand paint his flat.
Gosh, it was an actual commission then from an individual.
Yeah, and it's just to put... He wants stone effect and he wants the bedrooms to look like silk.
Well, it's interesting, actually. I see on your website that you can help with security by making doors look like brick or stone, yeah, which from a distance are so realistic, people would just avoid them.
Yeah, people just don't notice them. I mean, people are naturally not that observant when they're wandering around. So even though you're on a fire escape door, you might have the lever because you're not allowed to paint that. If you paint it out into stone effect, people actually, they just walk straight past it, they don't notice.
And what are you doing next? What you got lined up later on in the year?
I'm not sure. Lots of inquiries and lots of possible things, nothing confirmed yet. But fake food wise, it's quite good.
Well, I think your work is brilliant. I think you're a top talent. If people want to see Lottie's work, you've got two websites, which I think is slightly confusing. One of them is lottiesweeney.com.
Yep.
What's on that one in particular?
That's all the paint effect stuff, really.
And the other one is feastoffiction.com.
Feasts of Fiction with an S.
Big one, Feasts of Fiction. Why haven't you got all of it on just one website?
I couldn't make up my mind whether to separate it. No, it was more that I wanted to specialise. Because that's my, as a sole trader, your only way in really is to specialise.
Well, you are very talented, Lottie, and I urge people to look at her websites. You'll see photos. LottieSweeney.com and FeastsOfFiction.com. Thank you for taking the time to come in today.
Thank you very much.